yeah. Hey, hey, people, my name is Mr. Smaha. Some of the girls all say, I am a man with a great aha. Everywhere I go, I gotta put on my show. To let you all know,
Well, welcome back to Requiem for Rock. This is your host, Mr. Smart. I hope you enjoyed last show's CanCon topic, the roots of Canadian rock. And I also hope you enjoyed your Canada Day. Well, we got a little bit of gremlin stuff happening tonight in that I can't see the meters to tell what my volume is. But I'm told that you can hear me on your computers or over the air. And I can hear myself in the studio, so let's just hope it works. So this week, we're going to take the Requiem for Rock magic carpet across the big pond and across time once more to the Britain of the post-World War II era. And as we cross the great... Okay, sorry about that. As we cross the great briny sea, we look down at a ship, at an ocean liner. And there are people on that ocean liner that can be credited as the saviors of rock music. More on that to come. At a bonfire party recently, some people were reflecting on the phenomena that the English rockers have English-speaking accents, yet when they sing songs, that accent seems to disappear. As your humble narrator pondered and puttered in his hippie garden among the onions and beets this week, I reflected upon that question. And it led me to such other agro concepts as cross-pollination and insemination. How plants and vegetables, like human cultures, are impacted by the floating seeds cast off from the progenitive plant to create new strains and strengthen the genus itself. How, without that regenerative and procreative process, only a withering and death and extinction can occur. Rock and roll music, after its initial splash of exciting color and luscious fruits, was in fact withering on the vine by the end of the 1950s, at one point seemingly doomed to be a half-decade flash in the pan. As you've heard me explain before, dear listeners, in that time, after the day the music died, the original rebel rock and rollers, whose rockabilly rebel yell smashed the walls of popular music, were either dead, disgraced, in the army, or in jail, leaving only a vapid bobby sound that passed for rock music. Rock was on life support for a while, looking to be heading the way of vaudeville and ragtime music. As Elvis called those once vibrant genres, dead. So who were those who held out that fragile lifeline? Who kept rock alive until it could reinvent and morph into the British invasion sound, which informed and influenced and nurtured rock for decades to come? Well, last show I asked you to look way up at the friendly giant. Well, now I ask you to look way down from our magic carpet over the Atlantic at that ocean liner. And as we descend over the decks of the luxury Cunard liner, ships like the Queen Mary and Queen Elizabeth, past the pool and the shuffleboard and the square sandwich martini lunchrooms, the first-class cabins, the casino and the promenade deck, down into the squalid bowels of the great ship, beyond even the third-class steerage. We come down the gangway into the crew quarters, strewn with hammocks and pin-ups and the stench of young men in cramped quarter. And in those quarters were those lifeline saviors of rock and roll, those known as the Cunard Yanks or the Boat Boys. For like that dandelion seed wafting in the spring breeze, the Boat Boys floated across the ocean to plant the seeds of rock and roll once again in a new garden. Thank you.
Cunard Yanks were merchant seamen from Liverpool, working as cooks, stewards, and waiters. They were pioneers of fashion, style, and music.
We brought culture in terms of what Americans look like. We started to look like Americans.
By rejecting the attitudes, dress, and ambitions of their parents, the Cunard Yanks were opening up a fault line between the generations. In this, they were the forerunners of the teenage explosion to come.
We wanted to be different. We picked up clothes, music, stuff that you couldn't get here, so you could go home and say, "Ha, I've got that, you haven't."
Great port cities are famous for being diverse and different. Standing on the edge of the world's great oceans, looking out to the far horizon, they are vibrant points of first contact.
A good friend of ours, Ivan Haywood, we all know, brought home a black Gretsch guitar, which he later sold or gave, I don't know, to George Harrison. And he still got the receipt.
It'd be about August 1957. Went up, bought the guitar from Manny's guitar shop, where it was $310 on the label, and they knocked $100 off. So, and then I brought it back to the ship, and that's made, we used to practice quite a lot. The next thing, you got a phone call from George Harrison, which I didn't know him at the time, and they hadn't made it big time, but just sort of local around Liverpool.
Cunard's Sea Waves broke the BBC's cultural control of the airwaves.
In Liverpool, we had a lot of black music, but that was because we were right by a big American Air Force base, Bretton Woods. But then the seamen coming in from America, from Montreal on the regular Montreal and the regular New York run, they brought records back. They brought records of the people they had here. Now, these guys went looking for music. And as I say, you're talking about 25,000 of them. Now, if you take just 10% of that 25,000, take 1%. So if 1% brings it in every week, what have you got?
Yes, the Cunard Yanks were not actual Yanks, but were English merchant seamen. Young, unskilled, hard-working men. Mostly from the blackened and bombed-out post-war port of Liverpool. They worked 70-hour work weeks for months at a time, serving the well-heeled Queen Mary passengers as cooks, stewards, bellhops, etc. But in their short stints of free time, spent in foreign ports, they made friends all over the world and were de facto greater cultural ambassadors than any of the hoity-toity diplomats traveling above deck. For as young men have always done in all generations, they wanted to look flash and be cooler than everyone else. So as they visited New York and Montreal on the out journey from Liverpool on the ocean liners, they were exposed to American culture, the clothes, the styles, the movies, the people, and yeah, the music. And just as Elvis and the other rock and roll revolutionaries had shocked middle America, that same music began to shock staid, stark post-war Britain.
All set to liven up Mayfair Shepherd Market come four young engine room mechanics from the aircraft carrier Eagle. And there must be a lot of mice playing around the Mayfair offices because all the cats are out here. So what? It's their lunch hour, ain't it? Dig those crazy sailors. Brother, it's cool down there, but not half as cool as the voice of the law, which is positively frigid. Obstruction, he says. Holding up traffic, he says. Just their luck to run into a square copper.
So it was the importation of American blues, country, skiffle, and rock and roll records, clothes and instruments by the Boat Boys, that ultimately led to the sound of the British invasion a few years later. And it was that very subgenre, British Invasion, that crossed back over the pond to challenge, modify, and rejuvenate rock music itself. So we'll begin, dear listeners, by looking at the American genres that were imported by these boat boys, by the Cunard Yanks, to be at first revered, then modified by the teens of the 50s who became the rock stars of the 60s and 70s. It is also interesting to note that during this 1950s socialist period in the United Kingdom, there was actually a trade embargo on American records and musical instruments. You couldn't buy rock and roll in Britain back then. As I said earlier, the constructs of American skiffle music, blues, country, and rock and roll are what Brit rock grew from. The seeds in the garden. So we'll look at a tune from America first, then one of the same genre as interpreted in Britain in the early form. Hopefully you will see the timeline, the progeny that occurred, and the cross-pollination between Britain and the United States. So let's start with American skiffle. Skiffle music in its purest form is the genre most related to the slaves of the American South, a form of indigenous American music, though some African influences are vestigial. The image of slaves playing musical instruments at night on the plantation that we see in movies is a false image. Slaves were not allowed to own musical instruments, as slave owners were paranoid of slave revolts. They feared instruments would be used as communication tools across the plantations to signal uprisings. So the slaves would have to use clandestine homemade instruments like washboards, water jugs, spoons, wash tubs, etc. They were able to create a unique sound of their own. Later, as slavery ended and instruments could be legally obtained, banjos, kazoos, and harmonicas were included in the ensemble. These jug bands got gigs playing for the rich and powerful in Jim Crow Southern America. Like this next band that I'm going to play for you, the Memphis Jug Band, as an example of skiffle, early skiffle. They were the house band for Boss Man Crump of Memphis. He was the big shot owner of Memphis back in the day. So here from 1930 is an example of early American skiffle. And like the later themes of sex, drugs, and rock and roll, we hear about that cocaine habit blues from 1930, the Memphis Jug Band.
Lehman's in a low, saw a sign on the window, there's no more dough. Hey, hey, honey, take a whiff on me. If you don't believe so, cane is good, there's Alma Rose that New York Wood.
Hey, hey, honey, take a whiff on me.
And I love my gin, but the way I love my coke is a doggone sin.
Hey, hey, honey, take a whiff on me.
Give me ease, crush your stuff long as you please.
Yeah, records like that one, Memphis Jug Band, Cocaine Habit Blues. That sound, it crossed the Atlantic in the fetid crew quarters of the Queen Elizabeth in a fascinating pattern of dissemination. First down the Mississippi from Memphis by the sailors of the Mississippi River barges, then swapped and sold to American merchant seamen in New Orleans, then brought north through the nor'eastern gales to be resold and swapped to the Cunard Yanks in New York and Montreal, to finally be played on cheap mono record players in bombed-out Liverpool. The Seedling. And one of those in Liverpool, listening in rapture to this American music from Mojo Memphis, this Memphis of the Big Bang rock and roll a generation later, the same town to Liverpool would do a generation later. This man would in turn himself have enormous influence on a newer generation. In fact, he would influence and motivate the band that likely had the greatest influence of all, the Beatles, as well as greats like Jimmy Page and Eric Clapton. So I'm talking about skiffle great Lonnie Donegan. Listen to this next early 1950s blending of American skiffle with American blues and a taste of the British music hall. That British music hall genre that, you know, so many Beatles songs, so many prog rock and all that borrowed and took from the British music hall. So what you're going to hear right now is a blending of American skiffle and blues with British music hall by a British proto-rocker, Lonnie Donegan. You can almost picture him greedily buying and swapping records from the Cunard Yanks as they made port in Liverpool, and buying illegal guitars from them. And of course, the very latest flash gear from America. Boat Boy delivered, right from Lansky's on Beale Street, Memphis, the same store that Elvis bought his from. Here's Lonnie Donegan with Digging My Potatoes.
Somebody's digging my potatoes, trampling on my vine. Well, I had a worried feeling, rest on my mind. Yeah, tell me why. I crept up to the window, thought I heard a moan, but I heard somebody say, oh, you suck in my sweet bone. Yes, you digging my potatoes, trampling on my vine. Yes, I had a worried. You was my friend till I caught you in my bed. Yes, you digging my potatoes, trampling on my vine. Yet I had that worried feeling right on my mind. Now I want to tell you, boy, leave my girl alone. Ain't nothing in the street but it, she can't follow home. Yes, I had that worried feeling.
Yeah, somebody's digging my potatoes. Lonnie Donegan was huge in post-war Britain, and prior to the Cunard Yanks' importation of records from artists like Elvis and Buddy Holly, was the chief musical informer and hero of a young John Lennon, George Harrison, and Paul McCartney. But those teenagers were beginning to have new heroes, like Buddy Holly. So they formed a skiffle band called the Quarrymen, in honor of Brit Lonnie Donegan, and their new spectacled Texas hero Buddy Holly, whose insect band name they would modify as their own later, Crickets Morphing to Beatles. So here is the first ever recording by the proto-Beatles, the Quarrymen, a skiffle rock band in 1957. Primitive, raw, and yearning, reaching across the sea metaphysically to that vast purple sky Texas prairie, the soul site of rock and roll. Here's the Quarrymen doing a Buddy Holly tune.
Well, that'll be the day when you say goodbye. Yeah, that'll be the day when you make me cry. How you say you're gonna leave, you know I'm gonna lie. Cause that'll be the day when I die. When you give me all your loving and your loving, all your hugs, kisses and your money too. You say you love me, baby, until you tell me, baby, that someday will
I'll be too.
Cause that'll be the day when you make me cry. That'll be the day when you say goodbye. You say you're gonna be, you know it's a lie. Cause that'll be the day when I die.
Oh yeah, the Quarrymen. Boy, you know, just what was to come and on the influences that were brought by the Cunard Yanks to John Lennon, Paul McCartney. Remember from other shows here, dear listeners, that in America and rock and roll, it was born out of the genres that I'm discussing tonight. Make sure that's off. Oh, here we go. So it's the same with British rock. So all of these different genres that formed together to create rock and roll in America, particularly in Memphis and in that Mojo Triangle, the same genres influenced Brit rock and created it. And one of those included country. John Lennon's statement that before Elvis there was nothing, well, that's not true. Because before Elvis there was Hank Williams. And the Cunard Yanks loved old Hank in the late 1940s, early 1950s, importing that deep south poor white cotton picker sound into the shores of merry old England. The slide guitar influencing artists greatly like Eric Clapton later on. So here's a Hank Williams tune that would have been brought over on by the Cunard Yanks.
When my baby moved out and the blue moved in, there wasn't nothing I could do but mosey around with my head in my hand. Lord, what am I coming to? I just keep moaning, moaning the blue. I wrote a nice long letter, said, Mama, please come home. Your daddy is lonely. lonesome, and all I do is moan. I've been loving that gal for so doggone long, I can't afford to lose her now. I thought I was right, but I must have been wrong, cause my head is starting to bow, and now I'm moaning, moaning the blues. You gotta treat her nice and kind. If you do her wrong, she'll leave this town, and you'll almost lose your mind, and you'll be moaning, moaning the blues. Oh, baby, 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 honey, baby, please come home. Your daddy is lonesome, and all I do is moan. I promise you, baby, that I'll be good, and I'll never be bad no more. I'm sitting here waiting for you right now to walk through that front door, then I'll stop moaning, moaning the blues.
Yeah, never think old Hank was not a significant influence to rock and roll. And in fact, the Cunard Yanks, they loved old Hank Williams so much that some of them even formed their own band to do his style. So here's the only example of an actual Cunard Yanks musical band. They called themselves the Blue Mountain Boys, an early moniker stage name for Hank Williams. Here they are straight out of Liverpool, the Blue Mountain Boys.
Small photograph of
Oh, yeah, that was the Blue Mountain Boys out of Liverpool, who should have went to Nashville, man. They had that sound, great sound. And hopefully now the answer to that accent question about the British rockers when they sing, maybe it's becoming a little bit clearer for you, dear listeners. American blues recordings of the great Chess Records artists like Muddy Waters, Willie Dixon, Howlin' Wolf, and rock and roller Chuck Berry came across under the hammocks of the Cunard Yanks to inform and mesmerize the 12-year-old boys in Liverpool and London, who would bug their working-class dads or aunties to get them that cheap guitar at the many pawn shops of post-war England. It's funny the irony of the highbrow first-class passengers, often the same reactionaries who successfully stifled rock and roll in America, were now unwitting fellow travelers of these boat boy harbingers of British rock and roll. Songs like this one by Muddy Waters and written by Willie Dixon. The great heavy metal band Led Zeppelin, notorious pinchers of lyrics and riffs, stole this one for their first international hit. They quipped that you only get caught if you're successful. And that's what Jimmy Page had to say on that one. But here's Muddy Waters doing a Willie Dixon song. As I said, I'm leading in, playing for you the American version, and then to listen to the version that the British did. So Muddy Waters with You Need Love.
You got yarning and I got funny. Baby, you look so sweet and cunning. Baby, way down inside, woman, you need love. Woman, you need love. You got to have some love. I'm gonna give you some love. I know you need love. Just got to have love. You got to have some love. You make me feel so good. You make me feel alright. You make me feel so good. Oh, you make me feel alright. You make me feel so good. You make me feel alright. She's so nice, so nice. So nice, so nice. So nice, so nice. So nice, so nice. You are fretting and I am petting. Not a good thing, oh, you ain't getting. Baby, way down inside, woman, you need love. I know you need love. You just can have some love. Woman, way down inside, woman, you need love. You got to have some love. She got to have some love.
Yeah, Alexis, actually, Alexia Corner, but without his help in the very early days of the Stones, I mean, first of all, he was the only guy that had a gig going, you know, and we all wanted to play with him, and he was, I mean, I don't know if he'd like this term, but the grandfather of British blues, you know, at least in my generation, in my, you know, term of life. Alexis was untiring in promoting and putting together and finding the right musicians and gathered this kind of crowd around him, you know, of which we're all part of. And it's sort of hats off to Alexis, you know. I mean, for a Russian, he was a damn good blues player.
The Cunard Yanks brought the American blues records to Liverpool and London, to be eagerly and greedily absorbed by the likes of Alexis Corner that Keith Richards just told us about. Alexis's deep love of these blues, with a hint of that skiffle craze, not just informing but creating the English blues scene. And as Keith Richards told us in the clip, his blues gig, it was practically the only blues gig. So what that meant was that the teenage boys from the London suburbs would ride the trains and the tube into inner London, to the Ealing Club, to sit at the feet of Alexis Corner and harmonica virtuoso Cyril Davies. Boys like Jimmy Page, Eric Clapton, Keith Richards, Rod Stewart, and Mick Jagger. Mick, who's an awesome harmonica player himself, who, after being told to fuck off a few times by Cyril Davies, actually learned his harp licks, his harmonica licks, from Cyril Davies at the Ealing Club. Alexis' band, Blues Incorporated, were the Sunday night blues jam at the Ealing in the very early 60s. Later to be the Rolling Stones drummer, Charlie Watts was the drummer for Alexis and Blues Incorporated at that time. And the teens I mentioned were allowed to get up on stage and jam with Alexis, or they could get up and play during breaks in the Blues Incorporated sets. The Rolling Stones' first ever performance was done that very way, with instruments borrowed from Blues Incorporated, using those rare and illicit American guitars brought by the Cunard Yanks. So here is Alexis Corner and Blues Incorporated doing another Muddy Waters song written by Willie Dixon, and also with Cyril Davies on harp, the harp virtuoso. Alexis Corner, just imagine yourself at the Ealing Club listening to this one.
Told my mother before I was born, I got a boy child coming, gonna be a son of a gun, gonna make you pretty women all jump and shout, the world gonna know what that's all about. Cause, yeah, everybody knows from here. Too. I got the John the Conqueror. I'm gonna mess with you, make it pretty girls lead me by my hand. Well, gonna know. Seventh hour, on the seventh day, on the seventh month, seven doctors say I was born for good luck, and that you'll see, got $700, don't you mess with me. We'll be right back.
So the Rolling Stones were in Oro on the weekend. I hope any of you dear listeners who may have been there had moves like Jagger and you loved the show. Well, Mick Jagger started out his career billed as Little Boy Blue, singing with Alexis Corner. Then, with Keith and Brian and Bill and Charlie, the working-class London Alley Yellers, we got an exquisite interpretation of American blues that was significant in the later regeneration of rock itself. But my favorite sentimental Rolling Stones album will always be their very first one. But yet, as they gig into older age now, the love that they learned from Grandpa Alexis Corner remains. So hear now what Mick and the boys learned from Alexis and Cyril Davies. Yeah, I'm a king bee, baby, buzzing around your hive. Here's some dirty swamp blues, London style, the Rolling Stones, off their first album.
Well, I'm a king bee, buzzing around your hive. Well, I'm a king bee, baby, buzzing around your hive. Yeah, I can make honey, baby, let me come inside. Well, I'm a king, baby, want you to be my queen. Well, I'm a king, baby, want you to be my queen. Together we can make honey the world has never seen. Well, buzz a while, sting it then. I'm a king bee, baby, can buzz all night long. Yeah, I can buzz better, baby, when your man is gone.
Oh yeah, that was Little Boy Blue, Mick Jagger, with a gorgeous interpretation of American swamp blues artist Slim Harpo. Swamp blues making its way from the muddy Mississippi Delta across the cold, foggy Atlantic to the London smog in the sea bags of the boat boys. Here's Alexis Corner to give us another small taste of that era.
A white English band, Alexis Corner's Blues Incorporated, set out to play the new music. The band's drummer was a certain Charles Watts. Later, the band were to add a singer called Mick Jagger, a student at the London School of Economics, whose image was something quite new on the jazz scene.
The thing that fascinated was the way his hair swung. You used to see Mick moving his head and the hair would swing backwards. It wasn't all that long, but it moved, it swung. And it was quite an extraordinary thing because no one else had moving hair.
What sort of person was Jagger in those early days?
slightly grumpy, which hasn't changed, has it? I mean, you know, he can be. Mick can be grumpy if he wants to. But very, very much into, he was in it for the music. He really was in it for the music. And he and Keith were always together. I mean, they were the couple, they were the lads from Dartford who used to come in every week and come down to the Ealing Club, or we used to live in Moscow Road then, which is all of 500 yards from where we're sitting now. And we had a kitchen window which certain people knew how to open, and used to get up in the morning sometimes and find about five bodies stretched out on the kitchen floor.
Yeah, and he's still in it for the music, Mick Jagger. You're listening to Requiem for Rock with your host, Mr. Smart, on CKMS Community Radio, 102.7 on your dial, and RadioWaterloo.ca on your screen. Support community radio. Now, to clarify, dear listeners, I'm not stating that the Cunard Yanks were the only conduit of American rock and roll music and fashion, but they were a significant and critical one. There were, of course, some other sources. The stultified and reactionary BBC played mostly pop hits, Doris and Dean and Frankie stuff, but they did play some rock and roll. Well, you know, white boy rock and roll like Bill Haley and later Buddy Holly and Elvis. And there were the rock and roll movies, which we'll look at on another show, that modeled teen rebellion and a more nihilistic and less class-conscious worldview than what was endemic to the more obviously socially stratified British culture of the day, and still today. There were still American army bases in England then, which did bring American musical influence. However, the American GIs were always resented and shunned by the English boys, and you can guess why. They were snidely and jealously referred to by the male youth of Britain then as oversexed, overpaid, and over here. But there were also those artists of the time who crossed the briny sea to drive the kids to a frenzy, riots, and bring shock to the reactionaries of merry old England. My own dear old mum went to see and witnessed a riot in 1954 Glasgow with Bill Haley and the Comets. Jerry Lee Lewis came and was booted early from the tour for offending the Brits with his teenage cousin wife. Carl Perkins, Buddy Holly came to enrapture the boys from Liverpool. Race music acts, black acts like Little Richard, howled out that those strange new whoops and shouts that the Beatles love so much, but freaked out the bowler hat types of merry old England. And this next artist, Big Bill Brunsey, one of the real fathers of American blues. Another black Arkansas dirt farmer who was oppressed and struggled under the Jim Crow era of the American South. When he returned to Arkansas after fighting and being injured in World War I, the first thing he heard was being told, "Get that uniform off and put the overalls on." That was when he hit the road with his cheap guitar and informed and created that awesome mojo blues sound. But by the 1950s, fed up with the Jim Crow laws and being robbed of royalties, he decided to cross the Atlantic with the Cunard Yanks in steerage, to tour and play the jazz clubs of England, like the Cavern Club in Liverpool and the Ealing Club in London, transfixing a young John Lennon, and where a young Eric Clapton met his guitar role model. So here's Get Back by Big Bill Brunsey.
This little song that I'm singing about, people you know is true. If you black and gotta work for a living now, this is what they will say to you. This is, if you was white, you're alright. If you was brown, stick around. But as you black, oh brother, get back, get back, get back. I was in a place one night, they was all having fun. They was all buying beer and wine, but they would not sell me none. They said, if you was white, you'd be all right. If you was brown, you'd stick around. But as you black, oh brother, get back, get back, get back. To inform your office, the number that I got in line. They called everybody's number, but they never did call mine. They said, if you was white, you'd be alright. If you was brown, you'd stick around. But as you black, oh brother, get back, get back, get back. Me and a man is working side by side. This is what it meant. They was paying him $1 an hour, and they was paying me 50 cents. They said, if you was white, you'd be all right. If you was brown, stick around. But as you black, oh brother, get back, get back, get back. I hope built this country, and I fought for it too. Now I guess that you can see what a black man have to do. He says, if you was white, she's all right. If you was brown, stick around. But as you black, oh brother, get back, get back, get back. I hope win sweet victory with my little plying hole. Now I want you to tell me, brother, what you're gonna do about the old Jim Crow. Now if you's white, she's all right. If you's brown, stick around. But if you's black, oh brother, get back, get back, get back.
Oh yeah, that was Big Bill Brunzi. With Get Back or Black, Brown, and White. They both had a couple different titles to that. But, you know, Paul McCartney with his song Get Back is a tribute to that song, Get Back by Big Bill Brunzi. It's very a very dark and disturbing song, but the way he delivers it in that blues style, acoustic blues style. And on that note of acoustic blues, now we hear the English version of Big Bill Brunzi, Eric Clapton, doing Big Bill's Hey Hey, Don't Want to Lose That Good Thing. Yeah, beautiful unplugged version by Eric Clapton there of Big Bill Brunsey's Hey Hey, Don't Want to Lose That Good Thing. So while America, after the jailings, the death, and the disgracing of the early revolutionary rockers, settling into its self-induced coma of the sanitized Bobby era, of squeaky clean, safe boys next door, and the reactionary repression of the devil's rock music. The Boat Boys, the Cunard Yanks, like rowers of the rock and roll lifeboat, supplied the nascent early British rock and roll blues scene with the music, the instruments, the clothes, and the style of the banished and dead rockers. So like a second Big Bang, like the one in 1954 Memphis with Elvis Presley and That's All Right Mama, the bang that contained the dual-colored explosive of country and blues. Early British rock kept alive that American mojo spirit and made it their own. And they would soon come roaring back across the ocean, this time in the sky, with an invasion of their own that would liberate rock and roll in America. Tonight's Requiem goes out to those seagoing working-class heroes, the saviors of rock, the Boat Boys, the Cunard Yanks. Well, thanks for listening. Join me here Wednesdays at 10 p.m. for a little musicology, some sociology, a dash of history, and some great tunes. This is your host, Mr. Smart, wishing you a peaceful week. And thanks so much for listening. I love you all. Honest, I do. And here's Mick to tell you so.
Don't you know that I love you? Honest, I do.